Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Uh-oh. Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.
You boys like Mexico?
I'm as bad as hell, and I'm not gonna take this anymore.
And we're live. Welcome back. Taxation is theft. And I have a pretty awesome surprise for everybody. I have on today Thomas Walls, excuse me. He is the Minister of Foreign Affairs for the Free Republic of Liberland. And this is really, really awesome to have you on. I've seen a lot in the past about micronations, and you know, a lot of people have tried to start up new civilizations without like these big, backed by these big military takeovers. And it's really been interesting to see what people have created. And a lot of times it's been to, you know, get away from the governments that most of us are trapped in. They're kind of, you know, trying to create an escape from that. And so it's really awesome to have you on to talk about your new nation, which we talked about this before. I can't really call it a micronation because it's actually really, really, really huge. So welcome. And How's Liberland? How's the weather this time of year?
Thanks very much, Dan. Well, it's great to be here and great to be with all you folks out there in radio and podcast land. The weather in Liberland is pretty cold right now. It's freezing. And if you've seen some of the pictures from our president, Vitt, our boats are in dry dock and all the snow is covering everything around them. So it's pretty cold there right now. It's unusually cold this year, but normally it's pretty nice. It's actually, the weather's not too different from Florida, where I live. And summer is great there. Spring is nice. And early fall is good, too. But wintertime, you know, people kind of draw themselves inside. But we're still working hard on our ships that we have. We've got two large ships that are based in a nearby port that go back and forth to Liberland. And they can host quite a few people. And we'll be unveiling our newest ship, the Bitcoin Freedom, in our fourth anniversary, which is coming up in April.
Wow! So this already sounds pretty massive. Like this isn't you know, some of these micronations are like, one of them is just one guy, I think, in the desert of Nevada, and you know, some of them are, you know, they're smaller collectives of maybe a couple hundred to a couple thousand people. But this sounds like, I mean, you're talking about, you've got ships. You talked earlier about the number of people that you have who are citizens or who have applied for citizenship. This is actually a really big deal. This isn't like, you know, this isn't just like a little gag that's going on. You've right. Actually got, you know, as a country, as a nation, you've got a lot of assets and you're building with a lot of people. So this is actually... I don't want to say it's actually real, because of course it's real, but it's like, it's significant, I think is the word I'm looking for. That's pretty awesome.
That's a great description. I appreciate that very much. It definitely is real. The greatest resource we have is our people. We have about 400 to 500 actual citizens, people who have certificates that say they're a Liberland citizen. We have about a little over 500,000 applicants for citizenship. Just because you apply doesn't mean you'll get it. Right now, we kind of have to filter the process and limit it to people who actually help us out in some way. That doesn't mean give us a whole bunch of money, which is nice, of course. But if you work hard for Liberland, you don't need to donate. You know, if you organize for us, if you help us out in the commercial field and technological field and the diplomatic field, like I'm trying to do in the legal field. We also need international legal representation, and lawyers cost money. That also counts towards what we call merits. Merits are something you receive in return for service for Liberland. And we're going to actually have an ICO really soon, and the merit will be our token. and will be tradable. And if you have a certain amount of staked merits, which means you have those merits, they're invested in the country itself, which would be 5,000 merits, then you have the minimum threshold required to be a citizen. So definitely we have people interested all over the world. We've got over 100 representatives worldwide who are official Liberland representatives, including quite a few in the United States. We've got about 8, 9, probably about almost 10,000 people in the U.S. who've applied for citizenship, and we've got active chapters in several states. Of course, our Dave Molyneux is our representative for the U.S. He's in Virginia, just outside of D.C., and he's been doing a great job organizing in the United States. So. And we brought the President Vitt here many times to the U.S. We brought him to Freedom Fest. We brought him to a lot of cryptocurrency conferences. We've met with a number of senators and representatives in Congress in Washington. And we've spoken to a number of groups around the country, too.
That's so awesome. So I've got so many questions. But I think I want to start here because I've looked into you know, getting a passport in another country, because as a U.S. citizen who likes to travel, I found that a lot of countries are, you know, even though they're not part of the United States, they still have some tie to it. Like, you know, some of them, they want to report your taxes. Not that I'm trying to hide any money overseas or anything, but they play friends with the IRS. They report you. They you know, sometimes tell what assets you have. On top of that, you mentioned cryptocurrencies. When I was trying to buy Bitcoin, I don't have a driver's license. All I have is a passport. Okay. And so Coinbase, just because, you know, their process, they're growing, their process does not, if you're a U.S. citizen, they require a driver's license. They won't do it with a passport. And then there are other countries like, other companies like, what's this one? It's a European, I think it's Kraken. I had a difficult time with them as well because I was a U.S. citizen. They required
Kraken also requires certain forms of ID, but they do take Liberland passports, as a matter of fact.
Really?
Yeah, they do. They do accept that as a form of ID. Some of our folks have signed up with them using their Liberland passport.
Okay, so a couple questions around this. One is I mean, you just said you have passports. Are these like actual physical passports that look like the type of thing that would be issued by like a...
They're manufactured by a company that makes real passports for countries. They are not that widely accepted. We've been to about 10 different countries have accepted them for entry. We don't recommend using it. This is actually right now, it's a tool for our diplomats to show when they're on diplomatic trips. And look, we have a passport. This is our diplomatic passport. Sometimes we're received as bona fide diplomats, even though we're still working on recognition with a number of countries. Some countries are very strict about what passports you have. Like if they think your passport isn't legit, they will take it. Jeff Berwick, he's also another host, which some of you may know. Canada just took his Liberland passport. Let's see who else. We've had a few other folks have difficulty, but they use their passport on purpose just to see, you know, if they could get through. And we've actually, some places, you know, they were very interested in it. They said, well, how can we get this in our database? We want to add Liberland so, you know, we can make the process smoother. You know, you don't have to have diplomatic recognition with a country for them to accept your passport. So the president and I and other folks have actually used it to travel to about 10 countries or so.
That's really awesome. So this kind of leads into my next question. I've seen, you know, in looking into getting another passport, for one thing, you guys weren't coming up in the search engines when I was looking for that. So you got to work on that. But
they're not available freely. I mean, if you become part of our organization and become a representative in some capacity and help us out, then that would be put you on the fast track to get it. To get a passport. Some people are under the impression we're just mailing them out to people who sign up. We couldn't do that. That would be cost prohibitive, and it wouldn't really mean anything at this point, or wouldn't mean much. You know, it would be kind of like a novelty thing.
Right, and that kind of leads into my next question. One of the countries that I was looking at was the Dominican Republic, and they basically were openly accepting bribes. You would just go in there with, I think it was like $10,000 or $20,000, and say, I need a passport, and they would anyone would just give it to you.
Now, some countries such as St. Kitts and Nevis and other ones, other Caribbean nations, do have a program where if you invest a certain amount of money, you can acquire citizenship of that country. I think some Pacific Islands were doing that as well. It's a great revenue generator.
Absolutely.
That's clearly the reason why.
And that's even, you know, even the United States, like, you know, among their requirements to become a citizen, they do require, for some, it's like you have to live here for a certain amount of time or these other things. But it's always like if you buy property, if you invest, you get kind of like a little bit of extra, expedition into that. A lot of South American countries, European countries, they all have this investment type thing.
That we're trying to do that's a little lower tier than actual citizenship is e-residency. Now, Estonia has a great e-residency program where you can sign up online and register your business in Estonia and do business in Estonia. And we're working on a very similar program, an e-residency program for Liberland. And we've got a pilot project already launched last year, and we want to have one that's really that we know is working very well. We want to launch that in a couple of months, actually.
So that's an interesting question right there. Also, what is the difference between an e-residency and a citizenship? In most countries, it's you have to have a residency before you can acquire a citizenship. Especially with this concept of an e-residency where, you know, it comes from the idea that you're resident in a certain place, but now it's not even that. When it comes to like kind of a virtual thing, what's the difference really between residency and citizenship?
Well, citizenship gives you a stake in the country itself. You would have voting rights. So you would have a certain amount of staked merits, as I referenced earlier. You would be able to have a say in, you know, some of the workings of your own government. With e-residency, you would have the right to, you know, do business with anyone else from Liberland. And you would have your, you know, information for your business in a database, which would be accessible to other people in Liberland. So you'd be able to market and sort of advertise to them and have a whole new audience for your goods and services by becoming an e-resident in Liberland. It also gives you a place to register your company. And of course, it's a very new thing. So, you know, will other businesses recognize a business that's registered in Liberland? A lot of them already do. We've been talking to a number of banks who want to do business with us.
Wow. So that already sounds huge. For a bank, let's say a bank or even a transactional company like Visa or MasterCard to be able to say, okay, you know, cause they have, I think it depends on like the numbers of the card itself, determine what country it's from. For someone that big to say, okay, we're going to have a different number prefix that represents cards that come from Liberland. They're not just going to do that because like, hey, we're a couple people down here and, you know, we're going to do, you know, a few thousand dollars in transactions every year.
Well, we want to be prepared for that. We want to be, compliant with Know Your Customer and anti-money laundering stuff. It's just a fact of life that if you want to deal in that level of transactions with the rest of the world, you have to comply with those things. Now, one of the things we're introducing with our token, we're talking about doing a decentralized exchange, which will bypass, pretty much bypass all of that with crypto. So, for our actual financial dealings, we'll have to comply with KYC, AML stuff. And we do intend to comply with that so we can be taken seriously and legitimately. But we'll have another layer of things that are totally decentralized where you can exchange funds and crypto format with anyone else in the world who's part of the exchange.
Awesome. Okay. So, So then let's talk about taxes. If you're, you know, you're talking about having some sort of registry for businesses that usually leads to licensing, which usually leads to taxes. What type of taxes are we looking at in Liberland?
Well, it wouldn't be a tax in the sense that it's collected, by force. To sign up your business is a voluntary act. So if you pay a registration fee, then that wouldn't be considered a tax, but a registration fee. If you don't want to pay it, don't register.
So
you can still be a citizen. So
and would you still be able to do business without having to register a business?
Well, we wouldn't be able to tell Liberland businesses not to do business with other businesses. So, you can do anything. If you want your business registered in Liberland, you can register with us in our e-residency program and pay the fee. I think there'll be different tiers on what, you know, you can get as part of those tiers. But for our business registry, there will be fees for that. And we would take, derive revenue from that. As well as voluntary contributions to Liberland. If you donate to Liberland, you'll get one merit for each U.S. dollar of donation, and that will reflect on your that already reflects on your account. If you're registered as a citizen and donate to us, say $500, you will get 500 merits in your account.
Awesome. Okay, so that's pretty interesting. So the business registry is voluntary, but it kind of gets you, it sounds like, the ability to deal with banks that have foreign connections, to deal with foreign businesses and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. And to be taken legitimately as you are, because, you know, that's the thing. If you want to do business with other countries, a lot of them, because of their governments, require those businesses to, you know, only do business with registered licensed businesses, collect KYC information and all this other stuff. So it sounds like that's kind of voluntary, but if you don't want any part of that, then you're welcome to still do trade with anybody else in the country without those types of requirements.
Certainly. There's no way with the way our government's set up, there's no way we could control that, nor do we want to. That's the whole point. We want citizens to be free. We want them to engage in whatever transactions they see fit. And, we don't want to control any of that. Now, we have a constitution that's available. The draft is available on our website, liberland.org. That's in its third or fourth iteration at the moment. I think we're working on a new one, which is even more simplified. So I think most of your listeners and viewers will appreciate its simplicity and the intent behind it. We certainly do not want a situation where we have to impose any kind of mandatory tax. Now, people have asked us, you're going to join the European Union? Well, no, I don't think we are. They require of each member country a certain amount of taxes, and whether it's value-added tax or income taxes or some other kind of tax. We don't want to be any part of that scheme. Now, 2 weeks ago, we were just in Brussels at the European Parliament testifying to a significant group of people, including members of the European Parliament, about our future and our intentions and our prospects. So we'll have to deal with them. We don't want to be a member state of the European Union, but we'll definitely have to deal with them since we're on the edge of the European Union's borders.
Interesting. Okay. Sorry, I'm trying to think back. I wanted to ask you about this constitution. What would be your favorite part of this constitution?
Well, my favorite part. It just limits the government, and it limits the public administration from doing all sorts of things. Very specifically, it takes its inspiration from the U.S. Constitution and recognizes some of the flaws that have led to the growth of the U.S. government, and tried to address that so it won't get so bad as it has here in the U.S. It's also taken parts of the Swiss Constitution with direct democracy, double democracy, and the Estonian Constitution, which we feel are pretty good models for limiting the power of government itself.
So some would argue that a constitution itself can't limit the power of government because, you know, as a government grows, they always try to find loopholes, ways around it, change
sure.
it.
Sure.
What do you think is, you know, if we were to look a few hundred years into the future, what would prevent Liberland from turning into something that the United States has become?
Well, that's a great question, and we intend through our, you know, decentralized and voluntary association to avoid that. I think if you take a closer look at it, I think we do have pretty strong provisions on limiting the power and limiting the propagation of the power of the government itself. How can you prevent that from happening, from the worst from happening? Well, that's a question that can be applied to any society. You know, I mean, if you have very limited government, what's to prevent groups of individuals from imposing their will upon other groups? You know, you need people to be educated. You need people to be educated about economics and liberty. And that's what we try to do from the outset. It's a challenge. And, you know, you have a republic if you could keep it. And we want a very limited government, and we want to keep it that way. And that's certainly something that's been on our minds as we're drafting the initial constitution.
Okay, that sounds really interesting. I do want to read that. And of course, I'm probably gonna be sending you my opinions on it. So this sounds really interesting. I want to talk. You mentioned, you know, education. I feel the same way. Education is really a strong thing. I think the reason that the United States has been going down the tubes is because nobody's educated in the way government works, or even we're not educated in liberty. We're not educated in how to, the Constitution's supposed to, you know, restrict the government. We don't have to do anything because the Constitution's already done. It's done. We don't have to worry about it. There's not that education of, no, you have to be vigilant, and the people have to protect the Constitution. The people have to bring out the guillotines, and, you know, threaten the politicians when they start threatening us.
Totally. I think, you know, in today's political climate, people are just not very informed. They follow personalities, and look, for example, you know, Trump's, you know, well, I don't know whether it's true or not, but Trump said he was going to bring the troops home from Syria, which is great. And you have all these liberals, or left liberals, I say, they're not true liberals, they're left liberals, who are, you know,
they're
complaining
about that,
saying, what is he doing? You know, we're just, you know, leaving it to ISIS. Wait a minute, isn't what...
You were all anti-war, like, when he won and everything, yeah.
So the one thing that he does that is positive, or at least, you know, say he's going to do, you know, they're screaming about this. No one has any... Well, the majority of people don't have principles that they stick to, or that they're educated about. Even when they passed the First Step Act, which is a very modest attempt at criminal justice reform, you know, the anti-Trump liberals were crowing about that too. They said, well, they just want to, you know, give themselves a pass when they go to jail, or something insane like that. Now, this is a very modest reform supported by Rand Paul, Mike Lee, you know, stuff like this. You know, reform, you know, if someone's been sent to jail because of a mandatory minimum offense or something like that, this allows people to, maybe get off if they've been sentenced for too long. It's a very modest reform to our insanely unjust criminal justice system. And we can, you know, thankfully it passed. It's just a modest first step to reform our awful, awful prison industrial system. And, you know, you can hardly get agreement on that. I mean, most Republicans who've heard about it think, oh, that's a bad idea. That's just going to let all the criminals back out again. No, it's not. You know, that's not the point of it. See, people are just pulled in all directions by bad arguments and personalities, and they base their position on something based on who they don't like, you know.
Right.
So
what would be, so it sounds like we agree education is really important, but of course, in a society where there are no taxes, there would be no things like roads and schools.
Right. Roads. Who's going to build my roads?
Right. So is there a plan in place for education, or does government just have nothing to do with it?
Totally voluntary. Now, we as members of the government want to encourage education, but there's no, you know, state-funded schools or anything like that. We have talked about, we were down in Guatemala at the University of Francisco Marroquin, which is a libertarian university, by the way. We were talking about setting up online higher education where people could take courses and things like that. It would be totally unconnected to the government, but totally voluntary. So we would want to push, you know, things like homeschooling, things like online courses, totally voluntarily citizen organized education. You don't need the government to educate people. We can do it on our own as citizens. So we're definitely for separation of education and state.
With a system like that, my only concern would be that, you know, we kind of have, I mean, I don't really want to compare that to the university system that we have in the U.S., but there is a little bit of similarity where basically these kids are, they're given money and they're told go to college and study whatever the hell you want. And they go and they study things like, you know, liberal arts, gender studies, like
basket all the weaving. Yeah.
Yeah. If that's what they do, because that's what they're interested in, that's the voluntary system. Maybe that was the problem in the U.S. where nobody learned about government or freedom or any of these things anymore. And so now they're studying things that are largely irrelevant.
That's definitely part of it. Also, you remember that higher education in the U.S. is subsidized to a very high degree. The grants and student loans, which is backed up by the government to a great extent.
But that aside, are you saying that that influences the decision of what people decide to study?
I wouldn't want to comment on that too much. I mean, it might a little bit by making it easier to study stuff that's, you know, more, academic, not academic, but more
irrelevant.
You know, what about the STEM fields? You know, more people should be studying in the STEM fields. And I don't think, you know, that's probably just a lack of, application. You know, they're harder, of course. You know, science and math is harder than, you know, basket weaving or gender studies.
So right.
People tend to take the path of least resistance and go for the easy stuff, especially when they're not paying for it.
But we have some countries like, from what I understand, Japan is like really, like they really, they stress test their kids by forcing them to study like really high degrees of you know, technical math and, you know, science and other things. It's kind of by force. It's like government mandate, which is not something I advocate. But at the same time, how would maybe there is no plan for that, but I guess what I'm asking is there or could there be a plan to kind of create that and especially, you know, forget about math and science, just liberty itself and the defense of freedom. Could there be some way to influence people to want to learn about that and to want to protect their rights and their freedom?
It's difficult. We get a lot of the people interested in Liberland don't really know much about the ideas behind Liberland, and it's a challenge to communicate that to them. We've got a lot of people from third world, Middle East. They basically want a free passport to Europe, and we have to tell them, look, that's not how it works. We're about freedom and liberty and creating a free society. Now, some of them, yes, they do understand that, and we've got some amazing people from Africa who do understand free markets and how they can help bring prosperity and freedom to different societies. And we have great supporters there. Basically what we're doing is a teachable moment. We do try to connect people to free market and libertarian organizations in their country. So if they make them stronger, they can also help make us stronger. What you were saying earlier about Asian countries, particularly Japan and Korea and China, really emphasizing, really more technical fields of study for their students. That reminds me of that. You ever see that Asian dad meme that's going around? You get B, why you no get A?
Right.
That just reminded me of that. But there's quite a bit of truth to that, and certainly a lot of respect for such a very dedicated approach to education. And that's a cultural certainly a cultural phenomenon rather than, you know, what the government tells you to do.
Right. Yeah, that's definitely an interesting way to look at that. So let's talk about the geography for a minute, because you said you're right on the edge of the European Union's boundaries. And I've looked into a little bit of your origins. You're kind of like unclaimed territory between two other nations.
That's right.
So how did that work out? How did that come about?
About a little over 25 years ago, the early 90s, Yugoslavia broke up, and Croatia and Serbia unfortunately went to war with one another. Not over the border, but they had a number of outstanding issues that after the war left the border in dispute. And Croatia claims a large part of the territory on the Serbian side of the Danube River. And Serbia says the border should be the river now. Now, the reason for that is that the course of the river has changed course over the last 150 years. And so the Croatian version of the border has the old flow of the Danube as the border. Since it's changed and become a more straight line, we've got land on both sides that used to be in the other country. So the part where Liberland is used to be part of Serbia, according to the old flow of the Danube. And Croatia claims about 10 times the amount of that land on the side, which is now on the eastern side where Serbia is located. So neither one of them wanted this little piece of land, which was called Gornja Siga, and neither one of them have claimed that piece of land for the last 25, 26 years. So that's where we came in. Liberland said that, well, it's terra nullius, meaning no man's land. That's a, accepted concept in international law. There's very little no man's land left in the world. I think if you want to go to Antarctica or some, outlying rocks in the ocean, which are considered no man's land, you can do that. But this is one of the last accessible places that nobody claimed, and it was actually in continental Europe. Now, there's another place between Egypt and Sudan that some people at different times have tried to claim as their own. But it's in the middle of a desert, and, there's really rocky mountainous areas there, which are kind of inhospitable. Who wants to live there? So this is where we came in. We saw under an international law that we were justified in claiming a no man's land. And that's what we did in 2015, April 2015.
Awesome. So how big is this land?
It's 7 square kilometers, which is about almost 3 square miles. It's a very nice piece of land. It's riverine forest right on the Danube River. It was mostly uninhabited before. There was a little house or two on the land, which that was used as a hunting lodge quite a few years ago. But
just by an individual?
Yeah, probably. People did own property there, but Serbia compensated them when they relinquished their claim to it some years ago. So we do have a map which lays out the old property lines there. No one lives there, really. So I want that brings me to something which I'd like to talk about. We have a number of architects compete in the architectural competition that we sponsored. We've got some very, very interesting designs for architecture in Liberland. And one of the winners, we were just at his studio over in Rome, Sergio Bianchi. He came up with a very, very interesting design which preserves sort of the natural area around there, but giving us a sort of a very high-tech way to house a good number of people in Liberland. And a little bit later, I can send you the video that his studio prepared, as well as a link to the brochure online. It's a really amazing piece of architectural design. And there's also some other architectural designs that were submitted that were also very impressive. So we've motivated quite a few people who are professionals in the architectural field, in the cryptocurrency field, programmers and developers, people in diplomacy, and other professional endeavors who've stepped forward to help Liberland out. And it's really great working with a lot of these folks.
So, is there anybody that's living in this land now?
No, Croatia has established a blockade around the land, basically an extraterritorial blockade. Our land of Liberland is not on any Croatian map, and it never has been. It's never been part of Croatia. It was relinquished by Serbia, and that's what made it basically turned it into a no man's land. But Croatia, about 2 weeks after we were founded, said, well, this is too close to our border, and we're not going to let anyone here. So that's when they established the blockade around Liberland. So not even Croatians can go there, or Serbians or anybody else. Basically, 24/7, you see police boats circling around Liberland on the Danube, preventing anyone from accessing it.
Wow. That's So what do you have to do about that? I mean, you either have to get them to stand down, convince them to let you have it, or is a military defense? I don't know what you would call that. Whether that would be defensive or
We don't want any hostilities. I think in the beginning, so many people were interested in Liberland and came there. They were arrested trying to get there and break through the blockade. That was not part of our government. That was individuals who, you know, wanted to go to Liberland. So although our president Vit was arrested twice, and we do have some pending court cases in Croatia, thing is, the charges are so vague. It says we crossed a border, but they don't say where the border is. So that was ultimately thrown out and remanded to the constitutional court in Croatia. So we're still awaiting the outcome. They haven't ruled, because then that would put the court that would put the pressure on the court to define where the border was.
Right.
We also asked the European Union when we were there, does Liberland, or SIGA as it was called on some maps, does it lie within the borders of the EU? Now, Croatia is an EU country. So how they answered that will be very interesting. But yes, you hit on a very important point. Our responsibility is to convince people in Croatia, especially decision makers, that Liberland would be a net benefit to the region and to Croatia. We could bring a lot of jobs to the area. We've already brought tourism and maritime jobs and technological jobs to Serbia. Now, they're rivals somewhat, and I think some people in Croatia think we're a Serbian plot. You know, that's kind of silly. Of course, you know, there's this rivalry that's been going on between them for so long. We're not part of any of that. We're part of something new. And we have brought tourism and jobs and technology to the Serbian side. Serbia is happy to have us, and they are very appreciative of the business that we bring there. We brought people to invest and start companies in Serbia just because of Liberland, and that Serbia allows us to operate out of Apatin, which is a nearby port and where we have our ships. Now, if we could convince people in Croatia that that's a good idea, then I think we would get somewhere. We do have friends in Croatia. We do have Ivan Pernar, who's a member of the Living Wall Party, the Živi Zid Party over there. He's stood up in the Croatian parliament and explained and read basically a message that I helped write that we mean, we certainly don't mean any harm to Croatia, and we don't feel that we're a risk. They're acting as if we are some kind of a risk for them. But I think the level of education about Liberland is pretty low. So it is incumbent upon us to make our case. And we're about to release an announcement on the status of relations between Liberland and Croatia. We want to be friends and we want to be allies. And I think we can be another voice that supports Croatia if they would let us develop and live and not maintain this blockade, which is outside of their territory.
Wow, so it sounds like are a lot of the how would you say this, Liberlandonians?
Liberlandians or Liberlanders?
Liberlandians. Are they? It sounds like a lot of them are in Serbia.
Yeah, we have a number of them in Serbia. We have, our operations are based out of Apatin, and we have an office in Belgrade, the capital. And we have people in Sombor, which is a nearby town to Apatin. A lot of people come there in the summer. You're welcome to come. All the listeners are welcome to come to our at any time, or especially our anniversary on April 13th, which is great. Serbia is a great country.
That's a great day to have it.
If anybody wants to, and you know why, it's Thomas Jefferson's birthday. If you want to come to Serbia and visit Liberland from or on board our ships, you're welcome to do so. It's very easy to get there. Americans don't need a visa for Serbia. Make plans to – there's a libertarian convention right before that called LibertyCon in Belgrade, and a lot of people who go to LibertyCon also try to come to the Liberland festivities. So if you want to go to both LibertyCon in Belgrade and the Liberland anniversary right after that, make a trip out of it. Come see Budapest. Come see Zagreb or, you know, Split or the Dalmatian coast while you're over here, or Belgrade. Interesting stuff. If you're interested in history, it's full of a very rich history in this region, in the Balkans and on the Danube. And also the food is great. Cevapcici, you've heard of that, I'm sure. Cevapi. That's a great dish that they serve in the region. The people are really, really friendly and really nice. And no matter who you are, you're very welcome to come and visit.
Awesome. So here's a question I have for a lot of my friends who haven't left the country, even though I'm always pushing them to. Is it easy to get around if the only language you speak is English?
Yeah. Now, well, I was there 25 years ago, and not many people spoke English, and I had to get by and what little, you know, I knew of the language. I've studied it more since I've been more involved, and I took Russian when I was in school. So that helps a little bit. It's no substitute for Serbian or Croatian, but it helps a little bit. Some of the words are similar. German is widely spoken, but then again, more people speak English as a second language. So it's pretty easy to get around. Learn a few words, you know, please, thank you, where's the, you know, bathroom, stuff like that. That always goes a long way if you learn a little bit of the local language.
Awesome, definitely.
We'll post news about our anniversary on our Facebook page. Follow us on there. Follow us on Twitter. Give us a like. Feel free to sign up, and we'll send you email updates on what's going on. And the next time Vit is coming to the United States, We'll send a schedule out to people who want to come and meet him. He's probably one of the most accessible presidents in the entire world.
Awesome. So I've got links to your Facebook page and your website down in the comments. You mentioned Twitter. What's your Twitter handle?
Is that it's also liberland_org.
Okay, cool.
So yeah, you can find us there. Now, we did earlier this year at Acapulco, at the Anarchapulco gathering, we presented none other than Congressman Ron Paul with a Liberland passport. And
nice.
He was very excited to receive it. And he said, I always wanted a second passport. And, he also was interested in the position. He wanted to be the guy who vetoes everything in government. So
nice.
So we told him, yes, we could work him in. Actually, also Daniel Hannett, who's a very prolific person from the UK, was interested in Liberland citizenship as well.
Awesome.
You know who that is.
Yeah, so this sounds all really fascinating, and it's really going to be interesting to see where this goes. And it sounds like there's always these things that happen, like when government gets in the way and tries to control things, like border towns, right? Those were always, you know, something wasn't legal here, but it was legal here. So you have all these border towns that spring up of people who want to live on one side, but they want to participate in things that are illegal, but they're legal on the other side.
Right.
And it sounds almost like that's kind of what's going on with you know, with this blockade. It's kind of like you have a border town of Liberlanders, kind of like, you know, they're on the border, they're kind of preparing, they're ready to move into their new home as soon as it's, you know, quote unquote legalized by the government force that's there. I think that's really interesting.
Yeah, when we had our recent get-together, we hosted the Extreme Travelers Congress. None of them, they've been all over the world to like over 200 countries. None of them had ever been to Liberland. So we brought this group of about 50 hardcore travelers to Liberland. And that the night we had like a party in the restaurant there at the harbor at Apatine. The owner told us, wow, this is the best night I've had ever since I opened this restaurant is the Liberland people coming and having a big party here. So there'll certainly be more of that. Yeah, you totally hit the nail on the head with the border town idea. We do have, like I said, we brought quite a bit of tourism and business to the region. And I think once Liberland is opened up as a free zone, the region will increase by far more.
Wow. That's really awesome. Now, I want to talk about this for a second because you kind of talked about it earlier, but you're working with other countries to kind of be recognized as far as the passports or as far as just any type of recognition. Because I know there's like, it might not be that you're trying to get in, but maybe you're just trying to somehow do business from outside of a country and they want to know where you're from. What, you know, so it's not necessarily a passport, but so what's involved in that? Do countries have to pass laws declaring that they acknowledge another country?
It's different with every country. Where we already have relations with Somaliland, which used to be part of Somalia. Now people joke about, oh, you libertarians, you don't want government, why don't you go to Somalia? Well, this is Somaliland. This is not part of Somalia. It's in the northern part of the Horn of Africa. The main city is Hargeisa. They have established relations with us, and we've been there several times and signed agreements with them, and we have an embassy there. They recognize our passport. That's a much more stable country than Somalia. It's let me emphasize, this is not Somalia. It's Somaliland, and anyone can look it up. They're actually in the same boat with us as far as recognition goes internationally. They have relations with other countries. They have relations with United Arab Emirates, for example, who invests quite a bit of money in Somaliland. They have relations with different entities in the UK. There's a lot of Somaliland population there, too. So we already have relations with certain countries. Including Somaliland, including other countries. We've met a number of smaller countries, diplomats, who are much more easy to access than big bureaucratic ones. So we do have relations on certain levels already. Formal diplomatic recognition probably takes about 2 or 3 years of paperwork and stuff, but we're working on a couple other ones, which hopefully we'll see some progress on very soon.
Awesome. What do you think is the biggest, most exciting one that you're working on right now?
Well, there's a country, I won't say exactly where it is, but it's in the Western Hemisphere, which is very keen to establish relations with us. Actually, there are 2 or 3 in the Western Hemisphere, but we don't want to divulge too much right now. But we are working with senior diplomats from those countries. And then the heads of state, as a matter of fact. We met the one I'm talking about. We did meet with the head of state. Just a few weeks ago. So are moving forward on that. And hopefully, we'll have something come to fruition very soon.
It's interesting because it's, you know, if there's so many different ways to look at this.
I have to run, but at the top of the hour. So is there anything else I can cover real quick?
No, you know what? Actually, I was going to ask you the same thing. I usually ask that on the way out. If you've got anything else,
I'm glad to come back on another time, Dan.
Okay, yeah, we can definitely. I'm going to go read through your constitution and we can talk some more about that. We already mentioned your websites and everything. Is there anything else that any other information that anyone should know? Anything we should look for coming up in the news?
Yeah, well, we're like I said, we're recently in the European Parliament testifying, and there's a video of that. Pay attention to our Facebook page and our feed, and we're going to have an important announcement coming very soon, and you'll see that when we release it.
Okay, sounds great. Well, it's been great having you on, and I'll definitely I'll check out your constitution, and we should talk some more, and I definitely want to stay up to date and see how this develops, because this looks really awesome.
I'll be glad to come back on at any time, and I'll send you some additional links that you can share with the post.
All right, that sounds great. It's been great having you on, and taxation is theft.
Okay, yes, it is. All right. Over and out. Thanks, Dan.
Taxation is theft.
Please, at least leave us alone in our living room.
My job is to find the truth.
Double the taxes.
I'm a human being. God damn it. My life has value.
Triple the taxes.
This is an IRS agent's dream.
If you think that the Capitol will ever treat us fairly, you are lying to yourself.
Beautiful, lovely taxes.
Sorry, but I don't do taxes.
Did you see the memo about this?
The government is a greedy piglet.
Just leave us alone.
Do you know what Ralph just said?
The roads.